This audio is brought to you by MuslimCentral.com.
Assalamu alaikum wa rahmatullahi wa barakatuh, and welcome back to another edition or show with myself here, as you all know, and our resident brother over there in the green corner. I don't know what color, he's got too many there. So they're welcoming our brother again, who is, please introduce yourself.
Obviously Abdurrahim Green, and over there in the other corner is, of course, Dr.
Abdulhaq Baker, and you right. have read and you are watching.
We're watching a piece of cake, inshallah. And we have a very interesting topic this week, isn't it, bro? The lost
Absolutely.
Boys. Yeah, lost Absolutely. Boys. What's all this about, bro? Lost boys.
Good point. I think looking at all the previous discussions, it's important that we really have a look at what's taking place with our sons and the younger generation today. Because there's a lot of obscurity regarding manhood. There's a lot of obscurity about growing as men. And as some are saying, we spoke about this weeks before when we looked at raising children, but this is a slightly different aspect because we've got many who have not been given the tools or equipped to grow and develop as men. We really have man babies to an extent, and some don't like that term. And even if we're told we're acting childlike or childish, even many take offense at that, and rightly so, because we need to know what growing into a man or manhood is. Yeah. But the focus of today is going to be, okay, who are or what constitutes or the characteristics of lost boys? Okay, yeah. What does that mean? And many, some have contacted me and said, oh, we remember the movie of the 80s called The Lost Boys, and it was a favorite movie. And some brothers and sisters have mentioned that. And just that, the fact that that movie was a success, I remember it. These boys who were out on the street, they were actually vampires, but
they were good looking
hunks, and according to people's perceptions at the time, blonde haired, cool, chic, everything like that. And so you have this impression and societal perception that being less than a man, remaining Peter Panish, if you like, is the way to go. And you only have to look at the mess that we have societally, Abdurrahim. So that's what that means to me when I see Lost Boys.
Yeah, I think it is. But I think the thing is that, to be honest, bro, I think lost these days is being normal. And that's what it really is. It's just enough to be normal to be lost, because that's what normality looks like. We live in a world, we live in a society, definitely, that is in a state of madness, but they don't know it. Psychosis. That's what is really going on. And everything which human society has been built upon, as far as we know back in human history, it seems to have sort of disintegrated and dissipated. And it's not really a new story. It's a story as old as the hills. It's a story as old as civilization. You just need to look at Gibbon's The Fall and Rome of the Rise and Fall of the Roman Empire. But every civilization goes through this, bro. It's just the same. It's just the same story repeating itself over and over again. And basically, really, what it comes down to is a breakdown of, you know, simple, you know, basic moral principles. It's very interesting. I was reading, I don't know what, because sometimes I just do this. I start reading stuff on the internet and I start going from one topic to another and I get lost in this. But anyway, I was reading something about the Roman Empire. I don't know what it was, why I was reading. Oh, it's to do with Christmas. So it's to do with Christmas and Saturnalia. And then I started researching into Saturnalia. And then I started researching into, anyway, a whole bunch of really interesting stuff, right?
Right.
Anyway, bro, it's a whole nother topic for discussion, right? But anyway, I don't want to get too lost in it. The point is that Saturnalia or Christmas time in the Roman times, it wasn't Christmas then, obviously it was Saturnalia, but there were other celebrations as well linked to this god Bacchus, which was the god of wine. And basically Bacchus, but the cult of Bacchus was like this underground cult where they had all of these orgies and like really like human sacrifices and all this stuff was going on in ancient Rome, and it was all underground, but it was like really popular. It was very interesting that like there were people at the time, senators and people, who realized that this spread of immorality was really problematic for the stability of the empire. And they understood the connection between morals and that strong moral standards and really the success and the well-being of, you know, civilization.
Right.
But this is something really and it all comes really back, yeah, to this idea of bringing up children with strong moral values, that are grounded in eternal truths, the eternal truths, obviously, of revelation, for us, the Quran and the Sunnah. But, you know, even those remains of the revelation, you know, a strong Christian upbringing, all of these things, bro, are today looked down upon, frowned upon, ridiculed, you know, made to look odd, made to look strange. So then what are the basis? What basis are our kids? What basis are our boys, right? But this goes for boys and girls. But what is the basis of what they think is important in life, bro? What is the basis? What is the standard which they use to judge how should they behave, right? That's the question. What standards are they being raised with? What morals are they being raised with? And my contention would be that in a world that it is just pure materialism, and when nonstop you are being bombarded with, you know, you need to have these trainers, you need to have this branded good, you need to have this and you need to have that, and if you're going to be cool and if you're going to be, you know, respected and whatever it is, you need to have these things. And if these kids can't find a way to get them legally, they will get it illegally. If they can't, and anyway, who wants to earn money? They'll just go and steal and rob and whatever, right? And it's that truly you have these kids who are just well and truly lost. They have no purpose in life. They have no direction. The only thing they have is this pursuit of materialism. And like I said, if they can't get things the legal way, they'll get things the illegal way. And where are we heading? Where is society heading? Where is it all going to go if this keeps going on and on? And it's just getting worse and worse, bro.
And that moving to illegal means or whatever means that will provide that instant gratification is an aspect of worship. As we know in the Quran, Allah says, I think it's in Zumar, have you seen him who has taken his desire as his ilah? And Allah knowing him as such has left him astray. And then we also have the description of appointing a qareen, a devil, to a shayateen, to confound him or her with confusion because they are now worshipping their desires, this instant gratification. So everything you said there, Abdurrahim, is really, really true. And as Fahima has said, and walaikum as-salam, rahmatullah, to all our brothers and sisters who are attending and participating regularly, it's good to see familiar names and unfamiliar names, and to our non-Muslim guests as well. Welcome to all of you, mashallah. Yeah. But as Sister Fahima has said, it's cool to be lost. And this is the thing now, when we look at that, as you said, lost is the status quo amongst the youth now. And when you try to provide them guidance, you're advising your son, you're advising your daughter, and they're frowning upon you. Like, no, let us be. We've got to find our way. You mentioned it last week and previous weeks, Abdurrahim. They say, our children say, we've got to find ourselves. You raised us as Muslims. We need to press the reset button and find out into ourselves. And that never happened in the history of parenting. It's never happened in that way. But society is providing this facility or facilitation of them to be that way. You and I know of families where sisters, families have called me and said, my 13-year-old daughter called the police and said, my parents are forcing me to wear hijab. They were encouraging her and I don't want to wear it. And within the hour, the police car was outside the home in South London and picked up the daughter with her belongings, never to be seen by her parents again, except when she wanted to make contact with them. We've heard these stories repeated over and over again. What you're saying, Abdulrahim, is absolutely true. Look at the story that, like, for me, epitomizes coolness in the Quran. Surah Kahf, the people of the cave, who fled, they came together and they said, we don't want this. And they made their way to a cave. They stayed there, relaxed together. That's cool for me, because they were doing that they were young, and they were doing it because they didn't like the decadence and what they were witnessing in the society that was a threat to them as young people.
Mm.
So I'm not saying that we want everyone to flee to a cave and in the spaces, but their premise was the deen. Their premise was worshipping Allah. And while I can't say that we should expect that, we are not of that category of people today. There must be a foundation upon which the youth are nurtured and taught, Abdulrahim. Everything you said, just repeating in a different way, but that is necessary. So lost boys and even Muslims today, we've got brothers who are praying, sisters who are praying.
Yeah.
And they're practicing the deen, alhamdulillah. But they want an element of that bad boy, bad girl impression. The way some of the young people come to me, or people who've heard about my past or me and everything, and, oh yeah, you know what, we really like how you were and everything like that. So do you? Because I came to the deen. I left what I was doing to come to the deen. I wouldn't go back to being in that way. That doesn't mean you become uncool when we embrace the deen. You can be cool and on the deen. Many are like that, mashallah, tabarakallah. But when you're trying to follow something that is antithetical to your fitrah, and you're doing that knowing that society supports that and not your religiosity, this is the challenge that the young boys, young men, young women, young girls are facing today. And today, I think the discussion is around describing that before addressing it, inshallah.
Yeah, I mean, it is, bro. And I think the thing is that there's this, certainly in the West, and I think that some of these things that we are discussing and some of these things that we are, you know, we're experiencing as parents and the youth and so on and so forth, I think they actually, in many ways, are almost particular to the West and what is dominant in the Western world. And it's interesting that in a way it may be that, you know, this, you know, we often think that, oh, why is the Muslim world so backwards? But it may not necessarily be a disadvantage from some perspectives, right? Because when you live in a very, very comfortable, like when I say comfortable, when your life is super comfortable, then, you know, it produces this distortion of reality. And in fact, where's the adventure? Where's the stimulation? Where's the excitement? Like, again, a lot of young people, especially young men, I think young men, they need that. They need that adventure. They need that excitement. That, you know, they need to be challenged. I think it's really just really important. And you can understand for thousands and thousands of years of human history, that's what young people have done. And like we've discussed it before, how, you know, in many societies, there are these rituals that, you know, a man goes through in order to move from childhood into manhood, right? The manhood ceremonies, right? It's interesting that even in ancient Rome, they had a form of manhood ceremony. I think when the boy became a man, that he went through certain things and he wore a toga, which a particular type of toga, which illustrated that he was now a man, right? Like, we have nothing like that. Right. We have this exactly what you began with, this delayed adolescence. It's almost as if people are, you know, 50, 37 years old and they're still kids. Right. They're still behaving like kids. And it's looked almost as a good thing. Right. You know, like you like forever young, like exactly what you said, bro. It's like this Peter Pan complex, bro. It's like this, you know, this endless child. And really, bro, some people, like you know, literally their 40 years old. They're still living in their mum's house. They're still playing computer games. Yeah. They have no solid job, right? Just a bit to earn a bit of cash. Not married. Can't have a stable relationship. It's basically computer games, movies, porn, shisha, eating out, chilling with friends. This is their life, bro. And this is not just a few people. This is a lot of people. There's no challenge. There's nothing to motivate them, nothing to challenge them, right? And obviously some do still feel drawn. So that is that, it's almost that, what is it, that sort of urge to rebel, right? It's the urge to rebel, because like I do think there's still this drive within adolescence to do something different from what, you know, everyone around them is doing, which is not in and of itself a bad thing. What's bad is that society doesn't have a way for this energy to be channeled in a constructive direction, bro. That's the real problem. And I include, by the way, Muslims, societies, Muslim families. How do they challenge this energy? How do they challenge this, you know, this drive that teenagers, that kids have, right? When they go through that adolescence, that super energy, that vigor of youth, as you know, the prophet said, you know, the 2 feet of the son of Adam will not move until it asks about five. And one of the things the prophet said is your youth and what you did with it, because youth is a time of energy. It's a time of vigor when you can achieve so much. But what are they achieving? Nothing, bro.
Yeah.
Nothing.
Yeah, absolutely. And they're not concerned about achieving anything. And Matteo mentioned the statement there, which if Hassan can put that back up, which I think fits into what you're saying. Consumer culture extends childhood in order to keep captive consumers. And the consumers want to be captivated. They want to remain within that bubble, within that matrix, within that paradigm. And my question is this, though, Abdurrahim. Mm. Looking at that and looking at recent parties that we saw taking place in some of the countries out here, Saudi and everything, and hearing the people express themselves. Looking at that, how do we resist or challenge?
You know what, bro? I have to say something, bro. I have to, because I've been literally, bro, I watched this clip, this DJ, And look, this may sound a bit controversial, right? For me, the big issue is not the rave, It's not the music, I can sort of get that, right? What really, really got me was listening to this Saudi guy, some DJ, I don't know what he was. He's saying, he basically thought this was progress. We are a modern nation. This is modern. This is progress, right? And I thought, you know what? It's not the music that's really dangerous. It's not that other stuff. It's dangerous that you think that this is progress. That's what's really dangerous. You are mad. How do you think this is progress, right? Like, be honest. Say, I just want to have a dance and have a good time. But you think that's progress? You think that that's moving forward? That's not moving forward. That's not going to move your society, forward in any way, shape or form. That's crazy if you think that. You know, you are really, really lost if you think that. Sorry, bro, I had to interject. I saw this clip. This is by like.
I saw the same thing. That's why you heard me mention and link to that. My point is this. As you said, if there's an acknowledgement that this is what I want to do, and I know it's just letting off steam and I want to do that, call it what it is. That's for everyone. That's for within whatever society that you're in. But if you're now going to couch it in something that it's not, and many of the youth are doing that, but what's happening is society, particularly what I'm seeing in the West, are, because they're shifting in their direction and their values and their morals and everything. They're taking the youth with them. So the question I was asking you at that end, wa alaikum salam, Malahat, it's good to see you there. What should be happening is the home is that nucleus of family parental structure, or it was. Let's be clear, Abdurrahim, you and me, even in Muslim households, in the West, That is no longer the case. We can't just blame industrialization and
absolutely.
That's centuries ago. We're talking about now. The pull of society on the young is unprecedented.
Yeah.
And the diminishing of parental roles and responsibilities is unprecedented. And the state has taken more of the rights of parenting because there are certain things we cannot do. Yeah. And our children are aware of those and they move into that. They've moved into that, Abdurrahim, the society only encompasses or engages with them to a certain extent. And there's this vacuum between society and the parental home and the family home. And in that gap is where we're seeing that plummeting of hedonism. And the thing is that hedonism, people are daring each other to see how far you can go. Yeah. As you know, we can't speak about certain things now. Part of that vacuum includes the LGBTQ. It includes normalization of drugs, hard drugs as well. It includes the liberalism with which people are fornicating and enjoying each other's bodies and not understanding the psychological and emotional results or responsibilities and effects of that. All of that's taking place within that vacuum, and society has willfully left them in there. They've pulled them from the family home, deliberately so, and then they've left them in there because that's a safe place to be for society to control them. They continue to throw things in there. And as Matteo said, you've got willing participants who know nothing else. They know nothing else. What they do know is that morality, structure, targets, challenges, hardship are things they need to stay away from. And that's equated to the values of the home.
And this is the thing, bro. Like, I do think that part of the problem, like, I you know, part of the... Like, it's interesting. So, for example, one of the things that I did, and I wouldn't say, you know, at least with, you know, anyway, one of the things that, and I didn't do this consciously, I have to say, it sort of just happened this way. So one of the things I did is two of my kids, they started racing mountain bikes downhill, which is quite a sort of extreme, crazy thing. Very challenging, very athletic, and it was very interesting, bro, having a conversation with many of the parents, because, you know, like, the kids obviously couldn't do this without huge support, and it was a big financial drain, it was a huge drain on my time, on my energy, right? But it was so interesting talking to, like, all non-Muslim, there was no Muslims, we were the only Muslim people there, right? And very generally very white as well. But like, it was so interesting talking to the parents, and the thing that I heard again and again and again from mostly the dads, because it was mostly the dads taking their kids, and this is boys, you know, the dads of boys and girls, both boys and girls racing, was that we would much rather our kids were doing this than taking drugs, getting into trouble, committing violence, right? They understood that for them, this was something that they were giving their kids that was keeping them away from, and it was giving them direction. And to be honest, the kids will put everything into it, you know, blood, sweat, and tears. It's really challenging. Like, you have to train, you have to diet, you have to build your skill. You know, it's like, this is something like, put your energy into something like that. And it was so interesting, bro, this having this conversation with so many parents, and they would say the same thing over and over and over again. And like, not every, you know, it didn't always work, and sometimes it didn't matter. Like, you put all of this energy in, that even then the kids went off and did what they, you know, like, so many, we heard about so many like guys who are really good, but then they got into cars and girls and drugs and drink, and that was it. They were gone, you know.
But
I'm just saying, bro, it was this this common theme amongst parents as to why they were putting so much into this particular thing. And I'm sure this is true, not just of mountain biking, of, you know, hundreds of different sports and activities and things that parents get their kids to do. Very important, bro. And I do think the amount of kids, mashallah, are kept away from trouble because of things like that are many.
Yeah. No, mashallah. And to support what you're saying, I'm going to bring some personal examples here in that instance as well. For me, for example, as I said, I've just moved home again and everything, and I'm still waiting for some of my stuff to come from abroad. But what I realized in taking my sons, because my daughter's a UK Jeddah, as you know, I was taking them to sport activities, football, academy, basketball. And I was traveling with them, and I found that I could discuss things with them, really trying to show them why not only the activity, but the time we were spending was important. When I was in Jeddah, when I'd go to the mosque, I'd take them with me to speak and communicate and hear them. Some would speak to me privately if we were alone and everything like that. But then what I saw as well, which my wife and I were talking about today, is some of the furniture that we bought, we got the children involved in assembling and everything like that. And some of the stuff that they bought for themselves, we did make sure it wasn't too expensive, they could assemble. And they made mistakes in the assembly of these things. But then I wanted to see a learning process come through. But it's like, oh, no, we fixed it. I said, but would you buy something like that? Or if it was given to you like that, would you accept it? And it's like, no. I said, so why are you comfortable with that?
Yeah.
And they didn't get it. And I said to them, look, there's a thing about instruction. There's a thing about obedience. They have their place until you grow older and you will have those following instructions, obeying you, understanding the basic order in which to learn. And then I said to my younger son today, my youngest one, I said to him, you need to learn to learn. And he just stopped. He said, what? I need to learn to learn? How do you do that? I said, because you don't listen. What you do is you're already processing in your mind what you want to say and you're hearing noise just so you can say what you need to say because you want instant gratification. You want the problem to go away if there is a problem. And it made me think, if children are growing like that and our children have got parents present, how can they not go into an abyss of darkness? Especially those whose parents are not engaging with them, Abdurrahim. They're there, but they're not engaging. I know a parent, you know them as well, maybe you haven't seen them for a while. But I remember they moved back to the UK and they said one thing to me, and I had to pause. I had to think, whoa, okay, how do I deal with this? And he said, I don't care about my son, who's a young man now, being on social media till the cows come home, as long as he's indoors and he's safe from the gang violence and everything outside. And I was like, whoa, that's a very interesting point, because I've seen the destruction and addiction of gadgets. And how...
Bro, why? Why is it? Why? Like, why? It's just laziness, bro.
What is?
Why don't you take your kid, to martial arts lessons? Why don't you teach them jiu-jitsu? Why don't you go with them and do it yourself, by the way? You know, I'm not saying this to boast, but, you know, like I here where I live, I've done all of my kids, except one daughter, because she went to university before. They're all black belts. Some of them are third Dan black belts in freestyle martial arts. I myself got my black belt like a few months ago. I never imagined I would have got a black belt. And I only did it because I went along to the classes with the kids, right? You know, like, because you got to talk the talk. You can't just, you know, like say, you go and you, no, why not? I'm going to take them. I might as well join in, right? And, you know, the thing is, like, it's not just that. It's like, these are the things, like, why would you just let them sit on social media? If you could, you know, you don't, oh, this person who said this, bro, what the hell, right? Get off your backside and go and do something with your kids. I think about my wife, bro, the stuff that she used to do. SubhanAllah, she used to take them to tennis. She used to take them to taekwondo. She used to do all of these things. And, you know, this is when I was traveling around the world giving talks and lectures. May Allah bless her. Even the stuff she did was amazing. Yeah. Because she understood this thing. You got to give the kids, you know, why would you want them sitting at home in front on a screen? And you think that that's going to save them? Like, that's out of the frying pan into the fire.
Into the fire, exactly.
Right? I mean, at least with a gang, they'll probably learn a way, a lot more constructive stuff to keep them alive in life. No, I'm not trying to encourage gangs or anything like that, you know what I mean? But what, sitting on a computer, social media?
No, that's a good point. You know, Abdelhaim, I didn't ask him because that's a good question. I didn't ask him. I was thinking, now I'm thinking, yeah, I should have asked him, well, what are you doing with your kids? But yeah. I didn't ask him. So it can't be, it's either this or it's either that. We've got to be the ones, if we have that engagement with our children, to help them negotiate through these challenges. So, for example, look, Abdelhaim, you said you did martial arts. Good on you, mashallah. But next time we're in Brixton, you can stroll with me down the darkest parts and everything. Yeah, we'll do that together because you know South London quite well. Now you're a black belt. But what I'd say also, what I did as well, I thought, when I was in Saudi, I saw there weren't many activities for the children. So some brothers and I, we started our own football academy. We had started a league, different league. All of this we did, taking my children every weekend. Yeah. I was exhausted by Abdelhaim because come back from work, I'm working 6-7 days a week. But I saw what it was doing with regards to their benefit, their psychological, emotional, and physical. And it's a time when you can engage with them. Because Abdelhaim, what some of us did in the early days when we had children and this idealism, we sat down, we'd do with them was teach them about deen according to our understandings. And remember, according to the formative stages that I discussed, we were at that very idealistic, shadid stage, okay? And when you look at the results of those parents who've continued with that, their children are not on the deen. And there's psychological issues there.
Yeah.
That's a problem when you're
trying... It's very interesting, bro, like that you said that, because in my house, like, I have only probably once or twice sat down with my kids and taught them Islam in a formal way. Obviously, we talk about Islam and the deen the whole time, but it's not like we talk about it in the sense that we're giving them a talk. It's just part of how we live our life, right? So they actually know a lot of stuff, but they know it from the way we live. I literally have only sat down with them like they. I do this retreat for new Muslims, part of what we do in IERA, and so I've invited my family's come along and the kids have attended that, and because I haven't had a chance with my youngest lot, I sat down. But otherwise, like, actually, they're really thirsty for Islamic knowledge. So when I do it, bro, it's like they really love it because I don't give them too much of that formal stuff. And that's a sort of reverse psychology, bro. You understand? It's like if you're just forcing it down them the whole time, it's like, oh, man, when is he going to shut up? Yeah. But if you just like whatever, it's like, well, when you tell me something, Dad, tell me something, and then when you sit down with them, they're like, really like it. And again, it's all about understanding this balance and understanding, kids and how their minds work, and being able to, relate to them and understand. It's not that difficult. Right.
And doing things
differently. You were a kid once, right?
No, mashallah, what you said is ideal. And also doing things differently. Like sometimes I would sit with my children periodically, not too much, if they wanted. But then also we used to sit and read novels, okay? We'd read novels. We'd go around in a circle to read novels and everything. And I dare say, because the culture that they were in, they were watching and seeing other things. So, for example, the celebration of birthdays. And I'd say, Dad, what is it about some birthdays? I explained to them. I said, I've always acknowledged your birthdays. And they said, okay, so is that the same? I said, this is how we do it. So literally, you've got a lot of children, I've got a lot of children. So what would happen when it was their birthdays? We'd say, right, everyone come and recount for us the last year and what are your aspirations for the next year? And then I'd ask the others who were in the room, because they'd all be sitting there, tell us something about your sibling who's sitting at the front talking. And they say, I remember when you were five and this is what you was like as a five-year-old, or this and this. And it'd be a really humorous time of reflection. Yeah. And I said, for me, that's where we can go with that. So don't get me wrong. I'm not saying that's the right way or the wrong way, whatever.
No, it's really nice. I'll share with you an anecdote as well. My wife was telling me that she was having a chat with one of my daughters, and my daughter was saying, oh, I think I'm going to go with my friends. Like, if it's my birthday, I'm going to go. I'm going to have a dinner and this and that. So my wife said, my wife said to her, the Prophet Muhammad, he would fast every Monday. Do you know why? It's like, no. Well, it was his birthday, right? But the Prophet would fast to thank Allah for his birthday and every Monday, like every week. And what are you doing? And it's like, the door went all quiet. At that stage, it was like, you know, penny drop moment. And it was like, it was good. Cause it's like, you know, we're not like, I guess at the same, the thing is that there's some things we're a little bit chilled about and we don't, you know, you got to choose your battles, bro.
Exactly.
That's the point. Exactly. You've got to choose your battles.
But not only battles, Abdulrahim, sometimes you only have two evils and you've got to choose the lesser of the two. Yeah. We're seeing that increasingly in the West. And when some brothers and I have discussed and they've said, I don't do this, I don't do that, I do that. And I said, well, okay, and what's the result? This. And I said, well, okay, have you considered that sometimes you have two evils and you should choose the lesser of the one so that they don't move towards that evil. Sometimes we only have that choice. So what you're saying, so for me, this is the thing now, talking about the lost boys, the lost girls, if you want, in this example, they don't choose the lesser of the two evils. And if there's a good and there's an evil, they incline towards the evil because society has told them this is okay. You know, society, and when they get older, as you know, we lose our influence on them. And parents shouldn't want to be controlling their children. And we do have to understand there are changes taking place in them as they're growing and they're going to find out things their way and everything like that. But it's not a blank slate. It's not as though they haven't been raised upon some particular guidance, values, and nurturing hasn't taken place. And this is the problem now, because we see that sometimes you look at your children like, I don't recognize you. Is this what has been underlying all the time that you've been growing? I don't recognize you, because society allowed them to have a duplicity of lives. Okay. Yeah. Outside of the home, if they're within your home, they can do whatever they want. We don't know what they're being exposed to in social media. Let's not kid ourselves. We can't police our children on social media. We can't be like some parents want to be there dropping their children right up until they're 18, 19, 20, waiting outside college, university, and everything like that. That's not going to keep them from moving in the direction that they're being pulled towards and the peer pressure and everything like that. But what we need to look at, Abdulrahim, and this is the thing I want to ask you as I started out, how do we counter the societal drive to immerse our children into whatever culture is prevalent in society? How do we counter that?
I think you've already provided a really good clue for everyone. And it's like exactly what you said you did to your sons. Yeah, you said to them, you let them buy some furniture and you let them build it themselves, right? And I am a great believer in I think this is the key. I think the key is in empowerment. And what we have to remember is it's not about giving our kids a list of instructions. You can do this, you can't do this. Yeah. This is allowed, that's not allowed. No. Obviously they need to know that. Obviously they need to know that. They need those strong, they need those moral guidelines. Of course they do. But what is more important than that is, and I have to say, mashallah, my wife is really good at this. Yeah. Is giving them the tools that is going to allow them to navigate the world when they go out into it, right? That is the key. It's that classic thing. If you give a man a fish, you feed him for a day, yeah? But if you teach him how to fish, you feed him for life. And that's the other thing. It's not, what is not important, well, what is not so important is, you know, the do's and the don'ts. What is more important in a way is, how are you going to navigate that world as a Muslim, right? If you're a Muslim, and obviously looking at Saudi Arabia now, it's not like, you know, like you said, the whole rave thing and this and that. Like, okay, what's going to happen in 10 years? What's it going to be like in 10 years' time? We have to ask ourselves. Yeah. Every parent is going to be confronted with the same problem. You're not going to just be able to say to your kid, do this, don't do this and that. It's not like that anymore, right?
No.
You are going to have to understand that there's a world out there with all of these temptations. So what do you need to do? You need to train your kids to resist temptation. You need to teach them to delay gratification, not to be worshippers of their desires. Yeah. Not to just do whatever they want, when they want, as they want, how they want. You need to, and that is more important than ever, right, is giving your kids the tools of self-discipline. That is what it is all about, bro. Self-mastery, giving the kids the tools of self-mastery. I do think sports, competitive sports, right?
Absolutely.
Some more than others. Absolutely. Really, really help with that. Again, like, I'm not trying to, you know, push a particular sport, but I think in the case of a sport that is, and like, okay, football is great because it's, in a sense, like, you learn to work as a team, and that's very important, no doubt, right? Working as a team is a key part of where we want to be in the future. But you also need something that is really focused about you as an individual, where you need to learn to be very disciplined. It doesn't need to be a sport, but something where those kids are going to learn that element of self-discipline, of delayed gratification, that, yeah, in order to achieve something greater, I know I have to give up something I want right now. But it's going to be worth it, because on what I'm going to get at the end is going to be worth it. And it could just be little things you do with your kids. I don't know. Like, don't give them all those cakes and chocolates and everything they want. Make them work for it. Like, I have never given my kids pocket money, bro, right? Maybe it's because I'm a stingy. Maybe it's I'm super stingy or whatever, right? But for me, it's like, you know, no, if you want money, you work for it. You earn it. You whatever, right? You do something to get that. I'm just not just going to give you what you want. And they never, almost never get anything what they want just when they ask for it, yeah? It's like they're going to need to prove in some way, shape or form that they are worthy of getting that thing, right? And I think it's those type of things that are very, very important, bro. Otherwise, we're going to have lost boys and girls.
I agree. No, you're right. And there's two points came up from our colleagues who are with us today. Matteo asked for a rephrasing of the question. If Hassan can put that up, I think, can we, as he said, repeat. I hope you mean rephrase, Matteo. How do we provide youth the navigational skills that counter the societal drive to secular utilitarian materialism? Brilliant question, Abdurrahim. Yeah. You addressed that, I think, and that's the more articulate way, Matteo. Thank you for phrasing that. But also, there was the questions, the point of tawheed, instilling tawheed. Hassan, if you can put that up as well. And I want to touch upon that. Yes, Boshiba Umar, tawheed is the most important. Okay, but one thing we've got to be careful of in looking at this is not in it being taught in a rigid, monotone. That we saw when we became Muslims. And it is very important. It's vitally important. It's the heart that beats within the body, pumping the blood through our veins and arteries and everything. But when it's taught in a way where you, and I like using this term, Abdurrahim, when it's taught in a way that's theoretical and abstract and it's not actualized, okay, it doesn't have the same effect. It becomes an academic exercise. And if you ask someone, okay, memorize the 99 plus one names of Allah, they do it. How do you actualize that? How do you become cognizant of these aspects of Tawheed? And what I've seen is not many are teaching it like that. As I've said, there's the series by Sheikh Tahir Wyatt. Mm. They were astonishing classes. It's the first time I've heard one of our brothers from the West teach it in a way that it, I'm not saying it's dead, but you can literally actualize it immediately in aspects of your life, not just worship, not just in worship. So I recommend, I'd say to everyone there, if Sheikh Tahir Wyatt, if you look on YouTube, Wyatt's Wisdom, and you see the number of lessons, he's the first African-American to teach in the Prophet Sallallahu Alaihi Wasallam's masjid. He's a PhD, studied in Medina. I love him for Allah's sake. His knowledge is profound, but him teaching to the community at a level and in a way that when you walk out every day, when you're in prayer, when you're saying Allahu Akbar, and you think about what that means, when you're seeing that he is Ar-Rahman and you're looking at the world and the rahmah that he's extended and what that means. When we talk about Tawheed, we can't just say it. It's become a catchphrase. And I'm not saying, my brother, that you're saying that, but I've heard too many people say Tawheed. And then what we see is Kitab al-Tawheed is taught every year for 20 years and you don't see the effect of it on the person in their lives.
Yeah, yeah. Yeah, that's very profound, bro. And what you said is this practical, you know, and that's, again, that's why I don't really have formal lessons in my house, because for me, it's like, no, you live Islam practically every single minute of the day. It's not something you just, I mean, like, of course there is scope for formal lessons. Of course there is. Yeah.
Right.
But, you know, maybe that's not really my primary job as a parent, you know, as a Muslim parent. What I need to do is they need to see how practically you can imbibe Tawheed is imbibed into their life on an everyday scale. And that's what your job is to do. Right. Absolutely. And to see how they're knowing Allah and knowing their Lord is just an intrinsic part of you know, of their absolute everyday life. And, you know, someone was saying, I think referring to what I was saying previously about being, you know, too hard and, you know, I feel a bit exasperated, you know, someone thinks that giving a kid everything they want, when they want it, as they want it, is somehow being hard on them. You know, you are literally, you might as well just build a fire and chuck your kid in it right now if you think that's how you're going to raise kids. Yeah. It's not love. That is not love. Yeah. That is abuse. You're abusing your position. You're abusing, you know, that's not love. Giving someone everything they want, it's not love. It's not kindness. It's not compassion. And by the way, a time will come when your kids will realize that. They will realize, right? They'll just consider it weakness, because that's all it is. It's just weakness. It's an inability to really understand what is important and what is really good for your kid. I can't understand these parents who just give their kids endless crisps and chocolates and they have these flipping fat roly-poly kids. And they're only fat because those parents let them eat all this crap that they feed them. How is that? What is that? You think that's love? That's being good to a kid? That's being kind to a kid? It's disgusting. It's disgusting. And so I think it's disgusting that parents do that to their children. I'm sorry, yeah. It's gross.
But Abraham, you've touched upon it. And one of the reasons some parents do this subconsciously, deliberately.
My kids don't think I'm hard on them at all.
I'm not saying that.
If the person's saying that, honestly, I believe they do not. My kids love me to bits. I love them to bits. I don't think they look at me as being unfair or in fact, the one who's the tough one is considered to be the tough one in the house is my wife. So maybe I'm soft.
That point, though, is a good point, because parents, they overcompensate because they want none of us want our children to experience the hardship that we've experienced. And I agree with you entirely. When I see children being satiated every instance, being spoiled every instance. Rosina said a point, and I like how she phrased it. Please put that up, Hassan, about amputating our children, okay, by not developing a sense of independence, responsibility, resilience in the kids. So that's point on with what you're saying, Abdurrahim, and I agree with you,
bro.
And overcompensating and making the excuse, I want to give my children everything, then they become monsters.
Yeah, absolutely. Narcissistic monsters, bro. Pure narcissistic, you know, desire-following monsters. But, you know, you said something, bro, that spoke. Now I've forgotten what it was because you started me off with something.
When you remember, let me know. But, yeah, Aisha's mentioning this.
Something you said and it was like, oh, my God, I had to say something, but I forgot now.
If it comes back, let me know. This interjects, inshallah. But, yeah, the overcompensation, we've got to make sure and stop.
Oh, yeah, I remember now. I remember what it was. Yeah, I'm almost the opposite, bro, right? In a sense that I'm almost the opposite, because it's like so what you were saying is that you don't want your kids to go through the hardship that you went through. But in fact, in a sense, the hardship that I went through was probably because my parents were almost too chilled with me, right? And they were almost too relaxed with me, and they maybe spoiled me, although they didn't really spoil me. But from my point of view, although I've had very, very little criticism of my parents' parenting. I think they were really, really good parents. And I mean that seriously. Awesome. I think they did a great job. But I think if there was one weakness, it's probably they were too generous and too nice to me, right? And that's, so I mean, like, you know, my dad was very generous. He gave me a really good, nice allowance. I don't think, personally, if there was a mistake, I think that was his mistake, right? I think it's more important for kids to go through some type of hardship and go through some type of difficulty. I suppose I did, because I went to a private school and that was pretty horrific, yeah? And I had to cope with a lot of stuff that I didn't, my parents weren't around, yeah? So I wouldn't want to put my kids through that. But yeah, the whole thing of like, no, like it goes back to what I was saying. My kids don't get stuff readily, materialistic things readily from me, not that easily. Yeah. They have to sort of work for it. They have to think right. it through. So like, yeah, I think almost in a sense, you're right. You're right in what you're saying, but I sort of take it almost in the opposite direction, if you know what I mean.
What's interesting though, what you said is interesting, because you said about private school, and I'm glad that you said that. Because for many, they may be saying, what do you mean there was a hardship going to private school?
It's horrific.
This is
it was a boarding school. I was taken away. I was 9 years old, 10 years old. I was taken. I spent most of my life away from my parents. It's sleeping in a dormitory, with other kids, no parents around, no mum and dad to go back to at the end of the day. That's it. You're on your own at the age of 10.
Yeah.
That's
why it's important. I'm thinking that's why it's important, because the perception, as you know, of private education, boarding school, rich kids, white privilege. No. So you highlighting that, I think, is very important. Also, though, I think in looking what's being said by some of the comments that are coming up, it is down to perceptions. And you're right, Abdurrahim, with regards to giving your children everything. But when you've had or faced affluence, relative affluence, when you were younger, and through the split, the divorce, and the separation of family, you're plunged into a poverty that you never imagined you would see. So when you see some of the people, and we're talking 70s, 80s, it doesn't matter what era you're living in, you're seeing people not knowing if they're going to eat at the end of the day. Seeing the mother, because many of the children are being raised by the mother, as Nilofa has said, the single parenting. And sometimes the mother cannot control, especially if it's boys and girls as well.
Yeah.
What is happening with them beyond the home, their development?
Yeah, that's a whole, this is a whole topic.
Those children, from the moment of, I'm not saying that it's a lost cause, but from the moment the family unit has broken down and there's no male figure in the home, okay? Yep. I'm telling you now, personally, I know what it's like to be lost.
Yeah, I told you, that's loss, a whole other topic, bro.
That loss, Abdurrahim, stays with you.
Yeah.
And I'll share this much with you. When my father came to visit us one day, he was abroad, living abroad. He came and sat with us as adults. And I could see that my younger brothers from his subsequent marriage, okay, he shared some letters that they'd written and everything. And I sat there really quietly. And it was really, they're praising him, extolling his praises, everything like this. And then so I thought, I'm going to write to him. And I wrote a letter to him. And when he visited, I saw he was silent and he was quite shocked, because I wrote in that letter, I contrasted it with my brothers who were secure. And I said, my life, Dad, and we're talking about lost boys, my life has been like a ship in the middle of the ocean, in the darkness of night, the middle of the night. You cannot see the horizon. You cannot see the horizon of any country. You cannot see any land. You cannot see anything. You're just in this ship. You've got no anchor to stop the ship. You've got no direction that you're actually going in. You're just in this ship with black waves around you. Nothing, not even to see the moon at night. And you are drifting. And I said to my dad, that's how I described it. I was a bit more articulate in writing, but I said to him, that's how I felt. This is your son speaking. This has been my upbringing without a father figure. That's how lost I felt. So then when we become parents now, we don't know how to be fathers. We've got no experience of that.
Yeah.
We've got no experience of that. So in that instance, when you become a parent, and you're struggling in relationships, not just with your wife or whatever, you get on with your wife, but you're struggling to be a father. So let's be clear, that lost boy complex
continues
with many fathers
in
relationships because they're inequipped to deal with children. They don't know how.
Bro, they have to learn. And it's really interesting because, to be honest, bro, when you suggested this subject, lost boys, this was at the forefront of my mind. Honestly, the first thing I thought about was exactly this: the breakdown of the family, you know, single parent mothers raising boys without a dad. Yeah. And the problem is that I was thinking, that's not, like, historically, is that really a problem? Like, men go to war, men die, fathers must die, right? That must have been happening throughout human history. Mm. But the difference was, you had uncles, you had grandfathers, like the Prophet sallallahu alaihi wasallam. He was an orphan, right?
Right.
But he was raised by his granddad, right?
Yeah.
And
yeah.
With great love and great affection, and he was just treated in an amazing way. And so the point being is that there was always, like, if your dad died, that wasn't the end of it. There were other men, right, who were there to give you an example, to care for you, to show you the way. And this is all comes back to the problem with this society in which we live, where we are disjointed, where families are broken. And I'm not just talking about the nuclear family, the wider family, right? You know, the whole saying, it doesn't take, a parent, doesn't take a man and a woman to raise a child. It takes a village, right? It takes a community. And that's the problem. And then what happens, bro? Those gangs, those whatever they may be, it may not be a gang, but it may be various other things, right? They become the surrogate dad, isn't it, bro? That's what happens. They become that surrogate dad.
Absolutely. Right?
And that's the problem, because no more heroes, bro. Where are the role models? Where are the male role models? Where, they're not there, right?
And Ibrahim, that's what you said there is so true. Look, we didn't call ourselves a gang. Yes, we had a name. We did things together. Yeah. Brilliant sort of individuals. Many of them became Muslim. But one key defining factor of us, when we reflected upon it as we got older, my whole crew, gang, posse, if you like, if we went into the wider circles, could go 50 strong, 50 deep, as some would say. But it was an average, the core of us, about 16 to 20 of us. All of us, except one, all came from single parent families, either through...
You're all lost boys, basically, bro.
Either the father
died. Allah found you, bro. But
mashallah. Either the father had died or it was divorce. But every single one of us, bar two of our friends who were still with their parents, we were from single parent families, and the bond we had was very tight. We, as the Americans say, we would ride for each other. As we say in the UK, we would die for each other. That was the be all and end all. Some of the scars I've got internally, physically, are because of representing this family, this extended family. Now, that to an extent, we disrespected our elders. There were wider community members who knew some of what we were doing, not everything. So we had that respect for elders. We had that cognizance, but we had that respect for our mothers. And my mum said to me one thing. She said to me very clearly, she said, treat women as you would like your mother and your sister to be treated. And that stayed with me. I'm not saying I've been the perfect gentleman, but that stuck with me. And also the respect we had for women because of the matriarchal influence in our lives from our mothers. Okay, so that was a good thing, but that's not necessarily the case with what happens now in every instance, in every example, when we look at gangs. So we were lost, and as I've said, the lost boy syndrome stays with you, because you've got to navigate as a parent, you have to navigate as a husband, you have to navigate not having had that paternal figure guiding you, either the good or the bad. You just haven't had it. So you're making it up as you go along throughout your life.
Bro, it's been brilliant, bro. I think it's a good time to finish it, because that's just a beautiful, good place. What can I say, bro? Jazakallah khair always for your insights and
likewise.
And the great thing is, this comes from life experience, isn't it, bro? We're talking about our life experiences. We've been there, you know, gone through this and gone through that, and it's great to be able to share it. And I hope, alhamdulillah, some of our listeners will benefit, inshallah.
Absolutely. And again, your insights and examples, Abdurrahim. You know what? People who are watching, who are with us, Abdurrahim and myself have not seen actually been the same physical presence for nearly 20 years.
Bro, is it really? You must be, seriously.
Come on, think about it. I was thinking the other day, we have not been in each other's physical presence. Oh, and the beauty
It really feels like it, bro. Like, it doesn't feel like that because, mashallah, like, we've been sharing this platform now, like, doing these talks together for a time. Mashallah, we've done more together in this age of the internet.
We traveled the country. Abdurrahim, we traveled the country together for
a decade. Yeah, we worked together, bro.
And me. And so, mashallah.
Good times, mashallah. Definitely. Different.
But Jazakallah, Abdurrahim, it's always been a pleasure. Brothers and sisters, a pleasure to have you and your contributions, mashallah, tabarakallah. And we look forward to seeing you next week, which will be the final show of 2021,
mashallah,
before we go into 2022, inshallah.
Yep.
Jazakallah, everyone. And see you next week, inshallah.
Assalamu alaikum wa rahmatullahi wa barakatuh. Assalamu alaikum wa rahmatullahi wa barakatuh.